Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today on the show, we will hear from a very brokenhearted guest sharing the story of her sister's death at just 39 years old. Breeze's sister went through 7 rounds of IVF, and after her last pregnancy, cancer took her sister's life. The grief is ever fresh and immensely hard to process, so listeners, please be patient as you listen to her story, and be forewarned that this episode might be triggering or emotional for some. Thank you, Breeze, for coming on the show today. And thank you so much for sharing such a personal, hard story to tell.
You're welcome. I think if my sister was here, she would probably want to share her story. So that's why I'm here. I'm here for her.
So why don't you start with just telling us a little bit about your sister? Were you too close? What was she like? Give us an idea of who she was.
Yeah. Well, my sister, you know, we're 4 years apart. I'm older, and she was super fun and always up for an adventure. I'm a little bit more reserved, and she was kind of like we were the opposite of each other in some ways like that. So she just was super fun, loving, outgoing, always up for an adventure. She would love to explore and do things that I would never even want to do. You know, growing up, she always wanted to be a mom. Like, she made that very clear. She always knew. Whereas for me, I was a little bit more career focused and didn't really have that in my foresight at such a young age like she did. So yeah, we were close, but we were 4 years apart. So we never really went to school together. So, you know, a lot of our life, for me anyway, it's like I grew up with a little sister, but she wasn't really part of my life. Like, you know, I did all of high school before she went into high school. So, but once I went to college, we became really, really close, and our sister friendship just really flourished, and we had a lot of fun.
Yeah. Did you guys, so you actually would have finished college then, even before she starts. So you were probably able to bestow just a lot of wisdom to her and guidance.
She, you know, I told her one of the things I wish I would have done was study abroad. She went to Spain. She studied abroad for one of her spring semesters, and she ended up extending into the summer and just had the best time and amazing friendships from that trip. You know, one in particular who I'm still friends with today through my sister. So,
yeah, that's awesome. So you mentioned that she always wanted to have children, and that's kind of where our story starts with her and you sharing that. And so I know a little bit of your story. You've shared it with me. So talk to me about what it was like then when she got married and decided that they wanted to start a family. Let's start and talk about that.
Yeah. So my sister, she was older when she got married. She was the last of her friends. She had been living through her 20s, you know, having a great time. And just one by one, her friends were getting married, starting to have children. And she kind of got to this point where she wanted that so bad. She had always wanted that since she was a little girl, to be married and have children, to be a mom. And she just wasn't there yet. She hadn't found the right person. And, you know, when she met my brother-in-law, they had a long distance relationship at first. So we didn't know him very well in the beginning, but, you know, they ultimately, she met this guy and she loved him, and she was getting married. He proposed, and she was super excited. She was finally going to join the rest of her friend group from high school and college to be a wife and then to start a family. So she was really excited about that.
So they got married and they decided that they wanted to start their family. How old was she when they started thinking about, because I know so many people, and this may not be your sister's case, but in my own experience with my friends, especially here in, I'm in California. In California, the Midwest is very different, but in California, people are delaying having children because mm-hmm. they have so many other aspirations. They want to travel. They want to get married, you know, obviously get married. Right. They want to travel. They want to focus on their career. And then they realize, oh, wow, I'm getting older and my egg quality's down, or, you know, and then they have to kind of think about what are their options at that point. So can you walk us through kind of when they decided that they wanted to have children and how old they were and what basically kind of what led her to needing to use or wanting to use IVF?
Okay. Sure. So my sister, she would have had, this year would have been 8 years. So she was about 31 or 32 when she got married. I think she's 32. And she knew right away that she wanted kids. So actually, you know, we're not using anything even before the marriage because my sister had a pre-existing health condition that she was aware of that affected all the hormones in her body. Mm-hmm. And so she knew, she didn't know at that point how hard it was going to be for her, but she knew that she was going to have some, a little bit of a struggle. It was kind of what we always thought. It wouldn't come so easy for her. And when they started having, you know, they just weren't getting pregnant. And when my sister started looking into alternative methods or ways of, you know, trying to get a child of her own, biological child of her own, she didn't really tell us what she was doing at first. So she and my brother-in-law kept it a little bit quiet. And then ultimately, once they were already in the process going through everything, that's when she kind of came forward and said, you know, we're going to do IVF. And then, I mean, I knew what it was. I have friends, very good friends. I have three children of my own, and I have friends whose children are conceived through IVF. And so I just never really thought much about it. I thought, pretty cool technology, science that they can help parents conceive in this way that they would never be able to before. But my sister, you know, she really kept it quiet. And as I delved more into IVF and the process and everything, my husband was super fascinated with the shots. And he kept telling my sister, I want to be there. I want to give you one of the shots. And he was kind of interested in that way, like just more fascinated by you're actually shooting yourself with a needle with medication or whatever is, you know, hormones, I think. Whereas I didn't really want to see or witness any of that because from the outside as a sister, I think I really felt her struggle and I could see it wearing her down. And, you know, that was really hard. And that was just the first round. And so she was a pretty private person. But one of the things that she also did during this time frame of not having children on her own was she really started to pull back from all her friendships. You know, I'm sorry.
No, take your time. Don't be sorry.
They were, you know, a few children in, 2-3 kids in, all of her friends. And I mean, my sister had a lot of friends. And she was like the only one, you know, who was married and at this point couldn't have children. She wasn't getting pregnant. So her drive to have a baby was so intense. She didn't want to talk about it. It was the end goal in all her research. Everything she did for herself, I mean, she was pretty healthy. She exercised every day. She ate really healthy foods. She ended up getting acupuncture because she, you know, did some research and acupuncture helps people conceive when going through IVF. And she really believes ultimately that's how my first niece, she was able to conceive my first niece. And I say conceive, but I don't really know what other word to use for it. So, so my first niece was part of her very first round of IVF. And she was what you call a grade B embryo. And I think this one of your recent podcasts with a mom named Stacy is what resonated with me the most because my sister, like Stacy, I mean, it's just how they name everything in the office to kind of like take you away from the humanity of this human being. You know, at conception, it's a human being. We call it an embryo. We call it, you know, different names, but that's your own child. And I don't know. It was really hard to stomach and watch her go through all of that. She was so thrilled when she finally was pregnant. She was so thrilled and just the happiest person in the world. And we couldn't all help but be elated for her and excited for the incoming family members.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to stop for a second and just talk about the embryo grading. Uh-huh. Like you learned quite a bit about that from your sister's first pregnancy and your first IVF. So do you want to go into any more detail about like what grade B means or how they're doing the selection? If you don't, that's okay. But I think that's a good point to expand on if you're able.
Yeah. So it's just like your grades of on a test. Think of it in that way. And it is how my sister kind of explained it to me. So, you know, your A is really a thriving embryo that's going to have really good results to basically implant in your body so that you can grow a child. And grade B is kind of good, but not the best, you know, and then C and D and so on. I don't really know much beyond that, but I just know that my niece was a grade C. So it's like, you don't need to have the best in order to have a child, but she's quite a remarkable little girl today. And that doesn't define her at all.
So your sister was able to get pregnant through her first round of IVF with your niece. Did she have a healthy pregnancy? And what was the delivery like?
She had a pretty healthy pregnancy. She ended up delivering about 4 weeks early. I'm not really sure why. I just think it's kind of common in this world of when you get pregnant with an IVF, I don't know, I say IVF baby. And so my niece was in the NICU for only about a week. She was able to come home just before Christmas. And she was healthy. And she delivered vaginally, normal. So no cesarean or anything like that. So that was all good.
So after the birth of your niece, would you like to talk about what happens next? Is your sister, I mean, we know, spoiler alert in the intro, that she goes on to do more IVF. So could you talk about just kind of what happened next for your sister?
Yeah. So after she had my niece, she was, you know, super thrilled and just so in love. We just adored this little baby girl. And she started talking about wanting a sibling. So, you know, my sister and I were very close and she couldn't imagine her child growing up without a brother or a sister. She just went on this quest for, I want one more. You know, if I can have one, I can have one more. And, you know, I don't want her to grow up alone. And we would have conversations like, well, she's never going to grow up alone. I have three children and my children are, you know, her cousins, but like big sisters and brother to her. And, you know, we would have these conversations all the time about like, can we be grateful that we have one child? Like, look at what your body went through. Look at how much it took, you know, what you gave of yourself in order to conceive this little blessing. And she was a spitfire. She still is to this day. She's a handful and she's got, you know, I think they always say that the children who go into the NICU, I mean, they're very strong and very strong willed. And she is definitely that. And, I think my sister had her hands full. She ended up going back to work too. And, you know, so then my niece went into daycare. And so you work so hard to have this little person and you're not really taking care of the baby the whole time. You know, you have to, you know, have an end to a means, but, or a means to an end, but she wanted a sibling and for my niece, and she was going to get that. So, we knew that she started doing another round and going through more process. And we knew some failed attempts. We knew, you know, there were more egg retrievals, there were more implantations, there were embryos created, you know, they were implanted, they didn't take, but ultimately we didn't know how many process IVF cycles she would go through in order to conceive the siblings that she wanted for her first child. So after 7 full rounds, she finally really come clean and tell us like everything, not everything, but just kind of give us more detail and tell us, you know, my seventh and final one, her famous quote in my mind was, I gave it up to God and these were my last 2 embryos. And we said, go ahead and do both, because she knew planting more than one was a higher risk of not even getting pregnant, you know, let alone a high risk just pregnancy in general. So she knew all of that, but she just said there's these last 2 embryos that she had, and they implanted both. And sure enough, she was pregnant with twins. And, you know, some holidays had come and gone. One particular holiday when she told us in the springtime, you know, we were having a glass of wine and she wasn't drinking it, but I didn't know she wasn't drinking it. We were just, you know, kind of taking some videos, like toasting and doing some things together. And then finally, she and my brother-in-law were ready to like kind of share this news. And so they did. They told us, well, we have news to share and we're having twins. And my sister's smile was just ear to ear. And we were all shocked. My husband, my mom, even my children, who were still pretty young at the time. We were so shocked, but it was like, wow, what a blessing. You know, you're bringing in 2 more little humans into this world and Bailey is going to have a sibling. And they're roughly four years apart, the siblings. So that's kind of, you know, just how she didn't really come clean with sharing her story. She just, once she was able to achieve her goal of getting pregnant a second time, well, I don't even know if it was the second time. I don't know how many times she really got pregnant, how many babies were ultimately lost, but she, you know, only then could she finally breathe and say, this is going to be, you know, we're excited for our next phase of life.
Can you talk, you kind of mentioned it, but can you talk a little bit about the toll that you saw of all of these cycles, or just even the toll of infertility, really, that it had on your sister, that you observed on her relationship with her husband or her friends? You said she recoiled a little bit, which, I mean, I can understand that, right? Like infertility, we don't talk a lot about it. Mm-hmm. As a society, we don't know how to talk to people about it. And it can be really hard when it's something that like your sister wants so badly. And it's so good to want a family, right? That's not a bad mm-hmm. desire. You want a family so badly. And then to be surrounded by, you know, being invited to baby showers, being invited to friends' birthday, kids' birthday parties. I cannot imagine the like turmoil going on in your heart mm-hmm. and in your mind as far as like being happy for your friends, but also just mm-hmm. being really sad that you haven't gotten that desire. Right. So anyway, can you just speak a little bit to the toll of IVF on your sister and her husband?
Yeah.
And on the family. I mean, you guys all as a unit.
For sure. So my sister, I really started noticing her withdraw from her friends. And, you know, she worked. She was a school teacher, actually. So she kind of gravitated toward people who were single and didn't, you know, or maybe they were married, but they didn't have children. They were choosing not to have children, or just single people in general, and really pulled away from her really amazing core friend group that she had for so long, you know, going back to elementary school, really. And she would tell me like, it just hurts to go to, you know, oh, I got an invitation to so-and-so's birthday party. And, you know, I just can't go because it just hurts. And she felt like maybe, she almost felt like it was like a clown in her face, you know, where she was really being tested and she just couldn't take the heartache of seeing how happy they were with their complete family unit and enjoying life and having fun and celebrating this beautiful milestone, whether it was a birthday or a baby shower or whatnot, it really got to the point where, you know, she even missed, you know, some birthday parties with my children. I don't know if that would be the reason, but like she started going on a lot of trips. She did some cross country road trips. She did some different things. And just to kind of like, she just experienced life a little bit differently. She was trying, I think, but she didn't really want to be around that. And I just saw her kind of go into a dark place. And it was concerning, but my sister was so incredibly stubborn that when you did try to speak to her about something that you knew she really wanted, she didn't want to talk about it. She'd get really angry and really upset. And, you know, after she had my first niece, you know, my husband and I told her, you should really be thankful that you have one child, and you need to put your body through all of this all over again in order to have another. And she didn't talk to us for a few months. Mm-hmm. She didn't like what she heard from my husband and I. We both tried to speak to her, and she just stayed away. And that was really sad to, you know, to have her go through with that. And it wasn't until, you know, shortly after that conversation had taken place, she had ended up, you know, getting pregnant with the twins and came back into our lives kind of. She didn't quite ostracize us. She just wouldn't talk to us and just really stayed away and didn't want to hear anything negative. My sister was really the person who, even through her dealing with her cancer, she wouldn't speak about certain things because she felt that she was putting it out there, or she was giving up, or she was saying that it wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to create her own destiny, which is really where my sister and I are different in our thought processes. So that was always a struggle, because you want to be able to talk to your siblings. And I would always tell her, I'm not your friend, I'm your sister. And if I can't tell you what you really should hear, nobody's going to tell you. They're going to tell you what you want to hear. The really hard stuff is going to come from your family, either from my mom or from myself. My brother-in-law, he really just, what my sister wanted is what they did.
Yeah.
So.
And what kinds of, did you see any like health, like her health deteriorating at all during, I mean, was that why you were so concerned about her going through subsequent rounds, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was gaining a lot of weight. The hormones that she was injecting herself with, I mean, it really swelled her up so much. She was so puffy, and so she was heavy. And you know, my sister wasn't ever a really thin person. She was a healthy person, but we just watched her body just grow in size. And how can that be healthy when you're it's just common sense, I think, you know, for this medication to make you gain so much weight. I didn't understand the science behind that, and what it was doing to her. And, you know, when you're not feeling good in your body, it affects your mental health. It affects, you know, just how you feel in general. And she just was tired and she was worn out, and she just really kept her focus on, you know, she was working her career job. She was teaching, and she, and then her next goal was, I don't even think, you know, really working on her relationship with her husband. It was just, we need to have this family and then we can move forward. Hmm. So it just took a toll on her, I think, mentally and emotionally and physically. And it really shut her out from the rest of us, which, you know, family's so important. I mean, that's what you're working to create, is a family. You're right. Shutting the rest of us out. Right. So I never really understood that. It was very hard to witness.
You might not know this detail since you were not given all the details, but did you feel that the, did I'm you feel, sorry. No, don't be sorry. You might not be able to, you might not know these details since she was rather private, but did you feel at all that the industry itself, her physicians, the clinics, were pushing or driving or feeding into maybe your sister's kind of obsession with building her family this way?
I have no doubt. And referring back to your previous episode with Stacey, I believe, I feel like my sister probably would have been one of those people to come out and have a similar story. I feel like I know I don't, she went to two different doctors over the course of all seven IVF cycles. And I don't know the first doctor. I don't know either of them personally, but I've done a little bit of research and I have no doubt. I mean, it's just, it's like, I've never been into one of those facilities, but in my mind, it's like, you go into Target, you're going to pick out, you know, this, that, and the other. And you're, you know, we just need to, you know, you're, instead of paying cash, we're just taking from your body to create what you want in order to be Target with your friend's baby, you know, hypothetically. Like, I definitely feel like that's something that was going on. I mean, they just, you know, if you just keep going, we can make it happen. And the amount of money, you know, my niece, my first niece, we, you know, initially in the very beginning, we joked and we called her the $1 million baby. I mean, you know, people, families, they take out loans, they do all kinds of things in order to conceive a child this way and create the family that they think they want and they think they should have.
So after we kind of got sidetracked, but all important things to talk about, tell us about your sister's pregnancy with the twins. Was that a healthy pregnancy and delivery? How did that go?
Yeah, so she had a pretty healthy boy and girl. Actually, the girl, my second niece was born first, and then my nephew was the second one. She was pretty healthy all the way through, despite the weight gain. She couldn't really get rid of the weight. I mean, you're pregnant, so it's not like you can diet and exercise.
Right,
and
of course.
She was still, I have to give it to her though, because she would pull me out of my house, during quarantine, during COVID. You know, the twins were conceived during COVID and, born during that time frame as well. And so, she would pull me out of my house in the middle of a day, of a work day, to go for a walk around the block. And I have a pretty hilly neighborhood. So she was pregnant with two babies and she had more stamina and energy than I did. You know, but she was just a fighter, and she was gonna go through, she just was going to go through and do whatever she wanted. And nothing was going to stop her. Nothing was going to stop her. So I think I forgot where you wanted me to go with this.
No, that's okay. I was just asking about her pregnancy and healthiness. And it just sounds like she was determined to try to stay healthy during this pregnancy and take care of those babies. When delivery came, were those twins, I mean, twins typically sometimes come early, and then especially being conceived through IVF. So did those twins also, were they premature as well?
They were premature. They were about 7 weeks early. And my sister's pregnancy up through the end was I think pretty good. She did end up going into labor early. The babies were early, but I got the phone call to come over to stay with my niece because my sister's water broke. And I said, oh gosh, okay. You know, and in my heart, I knew these babies were coming. And she gets to the hospital, they stabilize her, they admit her, you know, they want her to hold them in as long as possible. You know, they're 7 weeks, you know, 8 weeks early at this point. And so she went into the hospital, you know, in the middle of the night, and the babies were born. I said, oh, that's not happening. You know, they gave her some medications to kind of hold off on labor. Her water had already broke. They were monitoring her. You know, we're talking. She was normal conversations. My brother-in-law was a little bit probably more stressed about everything than her, but, I said, Jamie, you're not gonna these babies are coming sooner than later. You know, you're going to have them. And, oh no, I'll be fine. They gave me medication. And sure enough, they were born a few hours later.
Oh, wow.
Via cesarean. And my niece, the one whose water broke, she was ready. She's also a Spitfire and has as much energy, if not more, than her older sister. And my nephew, he wasn't ready to come out. He was chilling inside and wasn't ready. And they actually had to break open his sack and pull him out. So that was a little bit traumatic for him, for my sister too. And then to have C-sections after her first pregnancy, she delivered a normal. And so she really didn't get to bond with them and hold them like she did. You know, I think she was still given that with my first niece.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, so that was really her pregnancy, but, she was otherwise fine and okay. It was really hard for them to leave the twins at the hospital, especially during COVID with all the protocols. Luckily, oh, because sure. They had twins, they were, both the parents, my sister and brother-in-law were both able to be there, to hold the babies and just love on them. And, we couldn't wait. We couldn't wait for them to come home. You know, they were fine. You know, they were really, really tiny. I want to say 3 and 4 pounds each. So when they came home, they could fit, you know, their car seat. They were just so tiny. They were like baby dolls. Just, so I call them two little peanuts. They were just these little tiny things and they were just so precious and it felt like you were going to break them if you held them. And,
You can't believe it. They were so tiny, you know, you're like, oh my goodness. Now you're, you know, walking around.
They are a beautiful representation of my sister.
Yeah, it sounds like the word Spitfire just keeps, you know, being said. And I can imagine your sister being that way, the way that you're describing her as ever optimist, like I go get her, like this is my goal. I'm getting it. Very driven woman. So it sounds like her children are taking after her footsteps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The girls are definitely my sister. My nephew definitely is a little bit more like my brother. Pretty laid back, pretty chill. But yeah, the girls are, especially the twin, my twin niece, she even looks like my sister. I mean, being 4 years apart, I have very vivid memories with my sister, you know, especially at the age where she's at right now. They're 2 and a half. And she just reminds me so much of my sister. And I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. You'll be able to tell them all kinds of stories about your sister and their mother and fill them in on the wonderful woman that she was. So this is going to be harder, but what was the timeline then from when the twins were born to your sister's cancer diagnosis?
So, you know, my sister was healthy. She was eating right, exercising. Her body was changing due to the shots of the hormones. She had gained weight, a lot of weight, and had been complaining before she got pregnant with the twins about acid reflux and her having back pain and stomach pain and just different things. And, you know, I would talk to her about all of that and give her advice and tips. And, she would go to the doctor. She went to the doctors and she, you know, had her gallbladder removed and, you know, just different things that didn't help her. Ultimately, she ate antacid like it was candy. And that was always very concerning. And, you know, went to a GI doctor, never made it to a second GI doctor. I said, well, if you don't care for this one's bedside manner, let's go to a different one. And she just never made it. And I think in her mind, getting pregnant with the twins, she felt that she was going to a doctor. And so even before conceiving the twins, she was ignoring a lot of signs that her body needed her to work on itself and, you know, take a break and just kind of focus on her health. Because she thought eating right and working out was the only way to be healthy when, you know, oftentimes we're so busy in our life day to day. I'm myself, I'm guilty, but it's like, if you have a constant pain or if you're eating antacids like a candy, you know, you need to go get that checked out. And I find that fascinating that people don't think about that. But I think my sister's mind was in such a different place. She just wanted the children, and going to the clinic, the fertility clinic, I think she felt like she was going to the doctor, and she had gone to doctor's appointments for some of these issues, but she was never able to rectify them because they took a back seat to her getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. So she didn't really take care of herself in that way, even though I say initially she was healthy. She was seemingly very healthy, and she was also pretty private about a lot of those things. So while she would share some things with me and I would help her with him, she didn't really give me a full picture. And, you know, I work in healthcare. I'm not a doctor. You know, I'm not a clinician at all, but I have a lot of knowledge, you know, been in the industry for a long time. And so, you know, I really wanted to help her, like, once I knew more of what was going on. And so, after she had the twins, she kept telling me, we'd come over, we'd go on these walks during the middle of my work day, during lunch, and we'd go on these walks and we'd have these conversations, and she'd tell me about her problems. And I'd say, you know, you don't need to wait for that specialist appointment that you're, you know, is 2 months down the road. Like, you can go to an emergency room and they'll do all the testing there and we'll find out right away. You don't need to wait. And so I kept that advice to her kept coming up during our conversations, you know, in the weeks leading up to her going to the hospital. And so I'll never forget the one day we were out on the walk, and she just told me, you know, about her back pain and everything. And simultaneously, I had gotten COVID like a few months earlier, and after I had COVID, I kept having nightmares that I was dying from cancer. So we're on this walk and my sister's complaining about her back pain, and I'm giving her advice. And then I proceed to tell her about, you know, my dreams and how I've got some appointments for myself to follow up with, you know, that I think I'm dying from cancer. And she looks at me and she's like, you'll be okay. You'll be fine. And, I'm like, okay, well, let's be fine together. You know, let's do this together. And, it turns out all along, like, I don't know, 6 cents or whatever it is, but, you know, I wasn't the one dying from cancer. So my sister, jumping ahead a little bit, she had some appointments in the books to see some specialists, but they were, later that summer. And let me just back up. Mm-hmm. My sister had some appointments scheduled later that summer to see some specialists to help with some of the issues that she was having after she had given birth. So the twins were born in October, and my sister, you know, we would go on these walks in springtime leading them through the summer. So I was getting ready to, 4th of July weekend, I was getting ready to go on a trip with my girls for a dance competition. And my sister was like, okay, you know, I'm going to maybe my niece, her daughter, maybe we can come out and see you for the weekend to watch your girls compete. Because my sister didn't want to miss out on anything. She was always there for my kids to watch all their sporting events and whatnot. And she really thought that's what she was going to do. But she also told me, you know, mom's going to come over on Thursday and watch the kids so I could go to the doctor or to the hospital or whatever. So fast forward to July 8th of 2021. My mom came over, watched the kids, and drove my sister with her three children, you know, dropped her off at the emergency room. And my sister went in and, you know, just, these are my pain, my symptoms, everything. And they knew, I think, pretty quickly what the diagnosis was. And I got a phone call from my brother-in-law later that evening about what they thought it was going to be. And my girls and I ended up packing up and leaving early from our trip. But that was the most devastating news to hear. So she went in, and all it was one test that they had to do in order to find out that she was having problems. And mind you, she had gone to a GI specialist before. She had her gallbladder removed, like, right, just 2 years earlier. I actually took her to the hospital for that appointment, and all they did was an endoscopy, and they knew that she had stomach cancer, gastric cancer of the stomach. And they kept her in the hospital, and we found out on July 12th of 2021 that she was stage 4 gastric cancer, which is stomach cancer, metastasis. So she was the one with cancer. That's a death sentence. And that was really hard. And she, again, put on her fighting cap and chose to ignore a lot of the other things going on and just was like, I'm going to come through this. I'm going to be the one survivor. God can't give me three children and not allow me to raise them. Yeah. I gave it up to God. God gave me the twins, you know. He said, I gave it up to God. This was my last, like, this was it. This was my last round I was going to do. And he blessed me with these twins. And So the twins were, how old were they? They were very young. They were 9 months old. They were 9 months old. My niece was 4 years, little over 4 years old. And we had my sister for 7 months before she passed. She passed February 6th of 2022, and it's been a whirlwind of craziness since then, since her diagnosis, really.
Does your family have a history of cancer? Or?
Nope. No cancer whatsoever. She was tested for genetics, and there was none of that. My mom and I don't need to get tested. Her children, my children. So no history of cancer. So it's like, wow, this really came out of left field, yeah, you know, but did it? That's my question. So.
And she was having like all of these symptoms, obviously, because she had the gallbladder removed before becoming pregnant with the twins. So
yeah,
she might have had cancer at the time, mm-hmm, and then was continually putting hormones in her body, putting medication in her body that, mm-hmm, puts us at risk for things.
Yes, definitely. So if anything, you know, even if the IVF didn't cause the cancer, how can hormones not help the cancer grow and spread? Yeah. And, you know, it's hard because I've tried to do some research and look into, you know, those scenarios, and there's nothing. Like, they either do a really good job of hiding it, or you just have these women who, you know, they pass on and their husband is so traumatized and just really trying to live day by day, you know, without their spouse to, you know, because they created these children through this process of in vitro fertilization. And they don't speak out. They don't come forward. And my sister's story is traumatic and horrible, but that's why I'm here, is just to share her story.
Yeah.
And I wish I could keep it together more.
You don't have to, though, so.
But just let people know, like, this affects your family, too. And it's hard on the siblings and the parents to watch them go through that, to watch them shoot themselves up with hormones every single day and, you know, have their body blow up into this unrecognizable, you know, body that isn't theirs, and to watch the mental toll that it takes on their psyche, you know, that they pull back from people, they become more withdrawn, you know, they're quick to anger, just very, very, very different than what, you know, my sister ended up, you know, being very different from what she was. Now, after she had the twins, she kind of came back too and was like, okay, we have our family, we're going to move forward, life's going to be great, we're going to plan these trips, and she had it all planned out.
Yeah.
But, it didn't go that way. And I'm not saying everybody that goes through this process is going to have this. Like I said, I have children, my children's friends who were conceived that way. Like, you know, my friend, they call them my mom friends. My mom friends who've gone through IVF, they're fine. They're very healthy people and, you know, they have no issues. But I know they didn't go for 7 rounds. I know that. And, I know, you know, that I think when you go through this process, it just, you're not really going to the doctor for yourself, for your own health. You're going to the doctor for like a medical procedure of conceiving, you know, humans. And it's just all, it's all very sour. And one of the important things that I wanted to say here was, you know, how children are conceived does not define who they really are. And, you know, my sister's death was not caused by her children. They had nothing to do with it. They're a product of her actions for herself. And they're beautiful. And I mean, we love them so much, and they're just, they're such a beautiful testament to my sister and her memory, her legacy.
You had said that they were really helpful in helping you heal, even just to see them grow and to spend time with them.
Yes. When I'm able to be around them, you know, their older sister had some activities that my sister had signed her up for that I kept going. Which took a lot of time away from my own family. And I've been very blessed to spend a lot of time with my oldest niece. And so not as much time with the twins, but every chance that I'm over there, you know, I always ask my brother-in-law, can I rock them? Can I love on them before they go to bed? My sister had a very regimented schedule for them, and they're very good sleepers. So, sometimes we get home a little bit late and I wouldn't be able to see them, but I'm hoping now that some activities are over, I'll be able to spend more time with all three of them and really just love on them, because I know they're missing that. You know, my brother-in-law, he's a dad. He's not a mom. He might be doing some things that my sister would have done, but you know, I know that he's not doing them the way she would have done them. And that's been really hard for my mom and I to, you know, there's such a fine line of allowing him to parent and my mom and I stepping in to help. And we support him. We're there. You know, whenever he's needed us, we've been there. And, you know, we always ask for first rights of babysitting. Just call us first. And, you know, it's been hard and stressful and painful, but being able to be there with them is really beautiful, because they're just so fun. They're so full of life. They're learning, you know, new things. They're in preschool, and the twins are in preschool, and my niece is about to go into first grade. I have the beautiful blessing of, you know, volunteering in her class through kindergarten once a week. Like, I know my sister would have done that. So it was very important to me to do that. And I hope to be just as involved in the twins' life as I'm able to. It's hard though, because I have felt over the past, you know, 18 months that it's like I have two families and I'm really being split in both ways. And this is not about me, but this is just me doing what I believe my sister would do for me if the roles had been reversed. And, you know, it's just a very heart-wrenching story, and it's very sad. But I know my sister made her choices, and she continued to do a lot of things, even though she had people who really loved and cared about her, looking out for her, telling her, you know, the opposite. So like your question earlier about the IVF doctors, I'm sure they were feeding into, we can do this, we can do this, we can get this done, we can get you your family. Mm-hmm. Whereas my husband and I were more like, you have, you know, when she had her first daughter, you have your family, like, let's be grateful for what she had, what you have. And it's not that she wasn't grateful for that. She just, in her mind, she had an idea of what she wanted her family to look like. And she was never going to give up until she achieved that goal.
Right.
And once she achieved that goal, 9 months later into her children's life, into the twins' lives, she was given a death sentence, and she then had 7 months with us. And those 7 months were hard.
Yeah.
They were really hard because she couldn't hold them. She couldn't love on them like a mom would. You know, we would put them on her lap and have to sit there and be ready to like kind of grab them. And yeah, that was another whole challenge of witnessing all those really hard events taking place, you know, and now just watching them grow up, hopefully I can keep, they'll keep her legacy alive. But my niece, my oldest niece will have memories. I know even though she was very young, she'll have memories in her of her mother. But the twins won't. They don't, they know their mom. They know the most intimate part of her, right? They know the sound of her heartbeat. But they didn't know her in this world. And she was so sick even after their birth that she didn't even get to do bedtime stuff. She was so exhausted, she would go to bed. My brother-in-law always really did all of that. And I would tell my sister, gosh, those are my most treasured memories of my own, you know, of myself with my own children, is reading them bedtime stories and putting them to bed and having those snuggles and cuddles at night.
Yeah.
She was so exhausted though, because she was ill. And looking back, you know, it all makes sense because she was so ill. I just wish she had a truly listened to her body. And a lot of times people think they're listening to God, you know, like God gave me these two children. Well, at some point with science, like, I mean, God is forced, like he can't say no, right? It's like this happens or I don't really know. I don't want to go down that road, but she was given this chance. You know, she wasn't able to get pregnant throughout all this time, but she wasn't, you know, she wasn't a priority in herself. And she should have been a priority. She should have made herself more of a priority, because if we're not here to take care of our ourselves, you know, if we're not here, we can't take care of the children who we create. So,
well, We're almost out of time, and I want to be respectful of that for you. So what would you say, I guess my last question would be, what would you say to women like your sister or couples like your sister's family that are just desperate to have children? Is there anything you would say to them, or maybe to women who might think that they need to go through exhaustive rounds of IVF to create their family?
I would tell them that you don't need to have your own children biologically to be a mom. I would tell them that, you know, there's a lot of different ways to be motherly. And, you know, if you're faith-based or not, I mean, you really need to ask the question of what is God calling me to do? And if you're not given it, if it doesn't come so easily to you, it doesn't mean you should give up. You know, you can be strong, but it's like, really stop and look and appreciate at what you have. And this certain number doesn't equate to a perfect family. Like, nothing is ever going to, the timing is never going to be right. The numbers are never going to be right. You know, it's just, there's all these different things, but, you know, for people really, really pulling away from their friendships and not speaking out loud, number one, I would tell them to talk to their friends, tell them, like, it's hard for me to go to your kid's birthday parties, or, you know, it's just really hard, and this is how I feel. And so you don't lose that. And then two, like, you can be a parent in so many different ways. You know, you can have dogs, cats. You can, if you're an aunt, you know, you can be the best aunt in the whole wide world. You can adopt later on down the road. You can foster children. There's so many beautiful ways that you can still be a mom or a mom-like figure. And there are so many kids in our world that would love to have an amazing person in that role. And, you know, my sister would have been great in any of those alternative ways. And I love my nieces and my nephew so much, and I'm so thankful that I have them as her legacy. And but I just wish that she would have paused and really listened to her body and took care of those underlying health issues mm-hmm. before she proceeded to try to have more children. I think that's the most important part, is just when you're having these other things going on and you have doctors telling you, oh, it could be related to, you know, having your first child, the abdominal pain, or the antacid reflux could be related, you know, stop drinking coffee and spicy foods and stuff like that. Like, if you're stopping those things or not doing those things, but it's still not helping the problem, you need to continue to fight for your health, and you need to get those things checked out, because none of us are immune to cancer or anything like that. And my sister's story is very tragic and heartbreaking, but I just would love for my sadness to turn into somebody else's happiness.
Yeah.
You know, if they go through the process and they have one child, but they find where they're in the same boat of more cycles and more cycles, having more, trying to have another, a second child, you know, just, I hope that they stop and think and, you know, really be grateful and thankful and appreciate what you have in this moment right now. Yeah.
Well, Breeze, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your story and your sister's story as much as you could. I think these stories are really important to tell, because the research doesn't show these types of stories or situations. And unfortunately, big fertility, that's what we call the fertility industry here at the Center for Bioethics and Culture, isn't going to share these stories. And so anyway, I just really thank you for taking time out of your day to talk with me and share that. And in such a public space like Venus Rising. So thank you.
Thank you for having me on and allowing me to share my sister's story. I'm really grateful for all the work you guys are doing.
Of course. I'd like to thank every listener and subscriber also for tuning in. Our goal here is on top of sharing stories, is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage everyone to think beyond the masses. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.